Fellow Freedom fans, we're back. David Allen Carmichael here. With my Faith and Freedom show, we're going to talk about the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, a basis of right versus wrong. So I hope that doesn't scare anybody. You know, sometimes these guys on talk radio are kind of scary. I've got somebody here, and I appreciate these guys coming. It's from the Physicians for Human Rights. I've got Nathaniel Raymond, who's been, I understand, Mr. Raymond, can I call you Nathaniel?
You can call me Nathaniel. That'd be fine, David.
And you could have said that right there. You could have said no on the radio. I tell my kids that no is always an option. Physicians for Human Rights, I appreciate him coming here. These are folks who are out about the world taking care of their neighbor, the old love your neighbor as yourself. They're putting themselves on the line for the sake of this, and I really appreciate the work they're doing. If you can, Nathaniel, could you tell us about Physicians for Human Rights and what it is your organization is doing?
Well, what we do, David, is we promote health through protecting human rights, and Physicians for Human Rights marshals the skills of health professionals and scientists to be able to document and advocate for an end to human rights abuses happening around the world. And we've been around over 20 years now, and in 1997, we were co-recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize for our work to help ban landmines.
Wow. So you were, obviously these are physicians. So it's a group of physicians. I'm guessing also there's other volunteers and staff members that aren't necessarily physicians. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we're you know, obviously largely based on a physician constituency, but we also include forensic experts, experts in gynecological health, experts in other types of forensic science, such as ballistics. We run the International Forensic Program, which often under UN auspices documents war crimes around the world, including Rwanda, Afghanistan, the former Yugoslavia, and in the Middle East.
Okay, well, okay, so you don't just base it on somebody's testimony. You're going to go in and verify it, essentially check what the evidence is to see if there's substantive facts that can carry the story for you, I guess is what it is. And I appreciate what you guys are doing. Now, specifically, the reason I called you and you got a heads up on this was this accusation that in 2001 there was a massacre. There were some folks, thousands of folks who gave up during a combat scenario and actually surrendered, and then ended up finding their lives at basically lost their lives after trusting to their captors after a promise of security. Could you tell the folks about the summary of that story?
In November 2001, as many as 2,000 Taliban and surrendered foreign fighters who were fighting the Northern Alliance and U.S. forces in northern Afghanistan were allegedly suffocated in container trucks following their surrender at a place called Kunduz. And they died, we believe, during a convoy from the northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif and were buried at a mass gravesite known as Dashti Leili in northern Afghanistan near the Shebergam prison. And the recent reporting of the New York Times on July 11th has shown that the Bush administration allegedly impeded three investigations into this matter, one by the FBI, efforts by the Department of Defense, and the Department of State. Physicians for Human Rights has been involved in this case since the beginning. We discovered the mass gravesite in January 2002, and since that point, we have done the preliminary forensic work, including autopsies at the site, and we've been advocating for a full investigation protection of any surviving witnesses, since several have been killed already, and security for the site. And so Physicians for Human Rights, for now 7.5 years, has been advocating for the truth to be known in this case and for justice to be done.
And I've done some homework on this. So one of the things that you guys are doing is trying to protect the burial site, because I have seen on the internet some satellite photos, imagery, where you could see prior to the burial, after the burial, and actually since since you guys began to investigate very openly that those burial sites have been changed, that is very, very clear that there's a huge amount of earth that's been moved there. Was this autopsy that you did on one of the bodies, was that before or after the site was disturbed?
It was before, David. In 2006, approximately 5 years after the initial event allegedly occurred, and about 4 years or so after we had done our preliminary assessment at the site, including the three autopsies you mentioned, satellite imagery analyzed by the American Association for the Advancement of Science shows that there are two large holes at the site. And in the August 5th, 2006 image, which has been making its way around the Internet, you see one of the holes present, and the second hole is apparently being dug by two objects in the northeast corner of the image. And what those two objects are consistent with is a hydraulic excavator, probably known to some of your listeners as a backhoe, and a GMAZ, apparently a GMAZ model Russian dump truck. And the implication of this is by itself disturbing. The site has apparently been tampered with, and we've confirmed that on the ground last summer with our forensic team. But what is also disturbing, David, is that after being left, we believe, largely undisturbed, the site was seriously tampered with about 3 to 4 weeks after we filed a filing in federal court for what's called a Freedom of Information Act request. And we filed that filing, and then, according to the satellite imagery, the site gets hit.
Wow. So what was the date that you filed the Freedom of Information Act request?
That was June 21st, 2006, and by August 5th, 2006, one giant pit is present, and apparently a hydraulic excavator and a dump truck are beginning to dig what we believe becomes the second large trench we documented. And these trenches, we're not talking like, you know, a trench in your backyard to put in the cable line. We're talking of a couple of football fields here.
Yeah, and as you can see in the imagery, it's clear that they're doing it in layers. Like it's clearing a certain amount of property, moving the dirt to one end, and then going for another row is what it looks like to me. But you know, I'm no subject matter expert. I'm an acoustic analyst, not a visual analyst. Now these autopsies that happened back in 2002, they were four bodies. What were the things that you found with the forensic testing or whatever you did?
Well, the autopsies reached three conclusions. Is that the likely cause of death is consistent with what we call suffocation by exclusion. And what that means is all other potential causes of death have been ruled out. And so basically the only cause that seemed credible for our team there was consistent with suffocation, and not suffocation in terms of choking. There was no sign of that. There was suffocation consistent with not being able to have enough air to breathe. And then in terms of the manner of death, the second thing that the autopsy suggests is that the manner of death is consistent with homicide.
Now, why would it be consistent with homicide?
Because there is no sign that these individuals died from choking, died from or strangulation, died from a disease, died from some form of injury, and they're also the remains suggest that these individuals who were wearing clothing consistent with Taliban and Pashtun ethnic dress were in a place where they were probably trying to get out of.
Okay. Now, and that's if you get into the story, and folks, you're listening to the Eagle 104.3 FM. I'm David Allen Carmichael talking to Nathaniel Raymond of Physicians for Human Rights. They have a website, it's just as it says, physiciansforhumanrights.org. They've been investigating, they've been calling for an investigation, where in 2001, because of eyewitness testimony, it appears that thousands of people were asked to, basically, this is November 2001, were asked to surrender rather than to continue in battle. And they were told, I've seen the video where General Dostum was talking to some of these folks, explaining to them the protections they would have by the United Nations and other people. Essentially, hey, guys, come with us. There's a few of you who will disappear. The United States will want to talk to a few of these guys. But the rest of you, you know, you go ahead and turn in your weapons and you'll be going home soon. It was kind of a comforting statement. And in not too long thereafter, literally thousands of them died. And Nathaniel Raymond's going to explain what the conditions were. What was the situation that that caused that possible? Now, again, this is every until it's all comes out in the open. You have the official measurements and all that kind of stuff. It's all in the terms of allegations. Now, there's going to be where we're going to connect the dots here and say why this matters. Why does it matter to you? I mean, that's what you really want to know. Besides just having an interesting story, is there's going to be a point to this. I do want to say, Nathaniel Raymond, that I read this article. I guess it came out July 10th. It says it was published by the New York Times on July 10th of this year. No. I'm not really sure. There's an article that was written by General Dostum. I guess he's off in Turkey or something like that because he's got charges that he may have done something wrong. But he said here, he says, it was stated clearly by his Northern Alliance that no, and I want to put a quote here, intentional massacre of prisoners of war had taken place. And I guess that implies two things, that there was no massacre. Well, maybe there was a massacre, and he's alluding that it really wasn't intentional. Could you tell the folks specifically the details of what happened with their incarceration and what the details of how they might have died?
Well, at this point, David, there's a lot of questions that are still unanswered in terms of the details of their incarceration and the details of how they died. But let's just walk through the scenario based on what the FBI agents at Guantanamo Bay, who interviewed several of the survivors, said that they were told by the survivors, is that people, in some cases 100 to 200 surrendered prisoners, were crammed, quote, stacked like cordwood, according to the FBI reports, into shipping containers that were on the backs of trucks, standard shipping containers that you would see on the back of a railway car or on a freighter ship, and which is a traditional Afghan mass killing tactic, and that more than just being suffocated, some prisoners died due to the firing of weapons, of guns, into the sides of the containers, and in some cases maybe in the backs of the containers with the doors open. And in one case, a survivor said that only 20 had survived out of over 100 or so in his container, and that basically people were who survived were licking perspiration, according to the FBI's report, off of the dead because there was no water, or using a rag to get condensation from people's sweat off of the ceiling of the container. And what was crucial here is that there's been a lot of allegations and a lot of questions about, were the U.S. forces there? What did U.S. forces know? I just want to make a couple things clear to your listeners. While those questions remain, two things are known. One is that the Bush administration clearly impeded three federal-level investigations to find out the truth. And as we know from other scandals in the past, the cover-up of the crime is often the crime itself. And covering up a war crime can constitute itself a war crime.
Okay, we've got to take a break right now. You're listening to Nathaniel Raymond of Physicians for Human Rights at physiciansforhumanrights.org. I'm David Allen Carmichael. Come back to the Eagle 104.3 FM after the break. You're going to hear some more. We're going to get a little detail. Again, this is going to be constructive. We always want to take this to a point where we can do something about it, and it's going to improve our lives, not just give us something to whine about. We'll be back.